On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to Talk and Sports number 175. With me tonight on the old Skype-o phone is our pal, Matty Lang. How's it going, man?
Great to be back on the pod. A little somber with the mood right now, knowing that we're going to be discussing Gord Downie tonight.
Yeah, no, it's true. And, you know, we talked a little bit about, for those of you who follow us on Twitter, the plan was to talk a little Leafs, but... You know, bigger things happen. We're going to do a little of both here. But, decided to put this, to do a Tall Can Sports as opposed to an audio Whiplash because Gord, you know, still is so associated with hockey and these sorts of things, and it leaves us the freedom to move around a little bit. But as you mentioned, it's kind of a somber day around here. Woke up to the news this morning that, of course, as most of you, I'm sure, will have heard by now, Gord Downie has passed away. Tough one because... We all knew it was coming, but you're still never quite ready for it, right? And you and I both being pretty big Hip fans, you know, tough one. What was your, first reaction when you heard it?
Gosh, man, my first reaction, hard to say, right? Because, like you said, we all knew it was coming, and I was actually just watching the clip of Pierre Trudeau.
Yep.
Justin Trudeau saying that exact same thing of that's maybe what made it hard, right? Is that we all knew it was coming and he allowed us to share that journey with him, but we didn't want it to happen.
Right.
It did catch me a little bit by surprise because we hadn't really heard much from Gord or the Hip in a little while. And, you know, in the springtime, he had made a couple appearances. He did a one-off show for charity in Toronto at Massey, and he had showed up to a Leaf game in the playoffs, I think, as well as a Raptors game.
Yep.
Kind of started to forget
it's
that
true.
He was sick.
Yeah.
Or maybe not forget's the right word, but after last year's tour, and it being such a big thing, and he released his solo album, it was a little bit more at the front of our conscience, I think.
Yeah.
And even, you know, from a healthcare perspective, you know, we deal with people from Sunnybrook, the hospital he was getting treated at all the time. And even, you know, they had been using it as a way to fundraise for cancers.
Sure.
Hadn't heard much from that either as well. So at first glance, it did catch me a little off guard. It really wasn't until kind of the afternoon I had a chance to kind of sit down once I was done work for the day. And was actually scrolling through some video that I had taken at the concert we were both at there in Toronto.
Nice, yeah.
Which was great for a bit until I got to the point where I could only hear Holly singing beside me. If you ever want to hear Holly sing, New Orleans is Sinking with Gord Downie singing backup, let me know, and I've got the file for you.
This is Patreon material. Yeah, you know, just before I let you continue there, someone else said the same thing to me today. It was weird because it came out of nowhere. It had been quiet. And I can remember just a couple of weeks ago, might have been over Thanksgiving, I was talking to my dad, who's not exactly a hip fan, but he'd been kind of following along what was happening. And, you know, I said to him, it's weird. It's been quiet. And I just kind of wondered out loud in conversation, does it mean we're getting close?
Yeah,
because, you know, is it time to stop being so public? Is it his family now that's more in control and they want some privacy? Or, you know, is there nothing to that at all? Because it was only probably a month ago where they announced that Gord's releasing another solo album. And I believe it's coming out on the 27th of this month called Introduce Yourself. Now, obviously he's finished recording that quite a while ago or putting that together, but you know, it was just one of those things where it was almost eerily quiet. You go, uh-oh, right? Like when it dawns on you that you have it's one thing when you hear something big. It's another when you go, the fact that I'm not hearing anything is what's freaking me out, right?
Yeah. And you know, the one that comes to mind in a similar vein, although nobody knew he was sick, was David Bowie.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Who kind of just disappeared for, you know, and again, it could have been more than 6 months to a year. He just kind of disappeared.
Right.
And released an album, had been recording an album, I guess, to release upon his death that nobody knew about. And it's always an interesting thing to see these guys who are true artists, and nice to see them spending their last days doing what they love.
Right.
And spending that time with hopefully the people they wanted to spend that with and doing something that made them so popular and so famous.
It was interesting.
And hopefully brought them some joy.
Yeah. Well, now was it you know, we talked last summer on this show after you and I went to that Toronto concert that you referenced, and I actually was lucky enough to get to two shows on that tour, and we talked a little bit about whether or not the family, like his family, would have been happy about his decision to go back out on the road, knowing that his time was now limited and they were going to have to share it with all his fans.
Mm-hmm.
But as you kind of referenced, this is all he knows. This has been his job. This has been his career. This has been the one thing that he loves to do. And who are we, or, you know, certainly just as fans, you know, to judge or take that away from him? If this is how you want to spend what little time you got left, you know, I kind of get that. Go out and do what you love one more time, man.
100%. And you know, brain cancer can do some funny things, right? I mean, anything that you don't need a medical degree to know that, right?
Right.
And it depends where the cancer is and which lobe it's in and what it's going to affect. So without knowing all of that, you know, he was able to make those decisions sound of mind.
Right.
And you know, hopefully he was able to make the right decision for him and his family, to share that with, you know, his fans, anybody who watched the videos and who will see I just heard they're going to release that movie a little bit early on.
I'm actually annoyed by that because I'm out of town this weekend and I'm so busy on Friday night. So I had it already earmarked when they were going to release it. And then as soon as they said on the broadcast tonight, they're like, and we're moving up the release date. I'm like, no, because I knew it was going to be this weekend. And then sure enough, it's Friday night on CTV.
I'm actually in the same boat as you.
Okay.
Sorry, I'll let you can finish. Let everybody know the name of the.
Yeah, it's on. It's called Long Time Running. It's on CTV this Friday night. And it debuted at or premiered at TIFF, was a big deal, and it did one or two nights only in theaters across the country, just a very limited engagement, and then CTV had the rights to release it. I believe it was going to be late this month, maybe the 27th, and now because of what's happened, they have pushed it up to this Friday. So if you're interested, it's called Long Time Running, Friday night on CTV.
Yeah, and if you're like me, set your PVRs.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going to have to do as well, because I kind of get it, but I'm like, as soon as they started the sentence, I was like, oh, this is going to screw me. I got to tell you, man, it was a little surreal throughout the course of the day, and I love the people who did it, and I'm certainly not judging because I appreciated it. I probably got 4 or 5 texts today from different people that said to me, sorry about Gord, like he was a friend or a family member or whatever. But it's no secret to anybody who's known me for any length of time. It's my favorite band. I'm super passionate about their music, seen them a pile of times. So I appreciate those sorts of things. But while you're kind of moved by it, at the same time, you're like, it's just so weird because, like, we didn't know him, but, mm-hmm. like, you feel like you did, right? You were that engaged with it for so long, and everything was so public after his diagnosis. He, like you said, he took us all on this journey with him that if you wanted to know what was up and if you wanted to be engaged, you could be. And so it was strange today. I had a couple buddies text me, hey, remember that time we went and saw, you know, in Peterborough or... you know, these cool memories and whatever. And so that's kind of been the day for me. I've had the music on all day, and there's times where, you know, I'm not above it. I'll admit it. You get a little choked up, and then the next one comes on and you're kind of smiling, remembering this whatever exactly. might have been happening the last time you hear it or whatever, but it's been an up and down kind
that's
of day.
It. Yeah. You know what? And it's, he did have that effect. And I think the band had that effect for a couple reasons. And even before we decided to get on the old Skype machine today,
I was
thinking about this all again, right? In a little bit of retrospect, and why does it mean so much? And it doesn't hurt that that's all we've been hearing all day, right?
Right.
Interviewing NHL players, and interviewing other, you know, important Canadians, and I just, you know, I was watching the CBC and they were talking to Peter Mansbridge, and
right, yeah.
Ron McLean was, you know, probably the most eloquent speaker out of everybody.
I saw that too. He did a great job. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, how he's not prime minister yet is just, I'll never understand. he's got my vote.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody else. And, you know, so again, just trying to be a little retrospective about this and maybe a little introspective too. And there's two things that come to mind. One is that they are the ultimate and the world's biggest bar band.
Yeah.
Right? There's some bands that are meant to play in stadiums. There are some bands that just feel better in a smaller venue. And for my money, my favorite hip concert was still at the GM Center in Oshawa, which again, you were at.
Which, funny how that
which
works.
Which was a Robinson, extended Robinson family.
It was a family reunion.
That's right.
About 3,500 people gathered.
With the adopted cousin. Just kicked in there.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about Marshall, not me.
Yeah, that's a good call, yeah.
So I think that's part of it, is that just there's that connection they had with everybody in that live venue. And the fact that they always made it feel like a small venue, no matter where they performed. And I think that's something that a lot of Canadians take as their college experience, as their university experience. That's just something that sticks with you. That's part of that experience
right.
for Canadian students, like, you know, tailgating is for American students. Mm-hmm. It's something that's pretty distinctly Canadian from, or at least from Ontario, from what I know.
Right.
I'd say the second thing is, and I know this is getting quite overstated today, but, you know, his writing, his poetry, he didn't, it was almost like he was writing a poetry or he was writing a book, right? He didn't write your typical pop lyrics. There was more in depth to it. He didn't paint roses and flowers
right.
all the time and love stories. He wrote about heartbreak and he wrote about, you know, the cold winter and the shitty things about Canada.
Yeah, like and
that are endearing to us,
right? Like that
make
speak
us
to us, right? Well, that only maybe Canada relates to kind of thing. And I was thinking the same thing. I've seen a few people comment on similar things that it's he loved Canada, and this goes a little towards what Ron McLean was saying and Peter Mansbridge was saying, and some of these. But that means sometimes you want more, right? You want what's mm-hmm. you want better. You want what? And so when he sang about loving Canada, it wasn't just all upbeat and hockey and beer. And I mean, there was that too. But he talks about David Milgaard, right? And what we did there. And he talks about what's happening right now with reconciliation and some of these things that are real Canadian issues that aren't all
yes.
positive, right? And
mm-hmm.
that and he's shining a light right on it and directly or indirectly, you know, making you kind of think about that and go, you know, these are, it speaks to you because it's us and we get it and we understand it, but it's not all great, right? And
mm-hmm.
that's so important, right? It's our story, for better or worse, for good and bad. That's the story he's telling.
And for a country that's, I mean, in the grand scheme, Canada is a very, very young country. We all accept that, but we're also not very good, and we haven't been very good as a nation of telling our stories and preserving our stories.
No, it's true.
And creating folk heroes, and creating that narrative of national unity sometimes, right? And it's a little bit to do with the disjointed history of the country, and a little bit just our, you know, the combination of the proper English rulers and the Protestant Scots who
you're kinda,
think everything's bad all the time.
And you also live in this huge shadow of this neighbor to the south that kind of forces you to, maybe humble is the wrong word, but forces you to kind of go, okay, we're still kind of, you know, it's a little brother thing, right? Where you don't beat your chest too loud, right? And
definitely. Yeah. So I think sometimes his writing, you know, take the blatant example of Bill Barilko, right?
Yeah.
And romanticizing that and telling the story of somebody who, you know, passed away, unfortunately, but left, you know, at least a good portion of Canada at the time as a hero.
Mm-hmm.
With kind of just awful circumstances, but and how that tied into the lore of the Maple Leafs and tied into the lore of himself being, you know, found the next time they win the cup. And these are stories that
it's
we
just a hell
don't
of a story,
share.
Right? Yeah. You needed someone to tell it.
Their ability to find those stories and to share them, to recount them, to, you know, nobody will ever forget that now, right?
Yeah.
That is ingrained. You know, the 16 game, you know, and how they, you know, they tied it back into 16 games to win the cup and all of that sort of thing is just unmistakably Canadian.
Yeah.
You know, of course we would find folk heroes and guys who score winning goals in the Stanley Cup who disappear hunting, but, can't get much more Canadian than that, can you? But, that ability is, I think, what really strikes a nerve with Canadians, right? We want these stories and we don't have a lot of people who are able to do that in a mainstream way, right? In a very popular way to, you know, we had... I mean, there's a history of great singers in this country. Like the one that's coming to mind right now is, Buffy St. Laurent, right?
Yeah.
Is that the last name, right? But she was never pop music, right? So she was sharing those stories. She was sharing that history.
Yeah.
But really, I remember her, you know, as a child and being like, I don't want to listen to this. This is old people music.
Right.
But everybody knows.
Well, little like Gordon Lightfoot. Right, who's also telling Canadian stories, but it's hard to get a bunch of college guys. Like when the house that I lived in my last year of college was four or five guys. It was beer and weed every weekend, and it was all these sorts of things. Right, it's just the weekend, right. But the hip were always playing. Right, like whether or not it was cranked up or someone just had it on in their room, kind of quietly while you were hanging out making dinner or whatever, it was always on. That didn't happen with Gordon Lightfoot. That doesn't happen with Sarah Harmer, right? That doesn't happen. Do I got that name right? Sarah Harmer. Yeah.
I'm just going to interrupt you. You're making, you know, the Pardon the Interruption, that TV show where they do the stat corrections?
Yeah. Yep.
Gordon Lightfoot made one brief stop at Neil McNeil Catholic High School. So everybody from my high school knew Gordon Lightfoot.
Okay.
But outside of that, I'm not sure anybody cared.
Right. But that's the thing, right? Whereas the hip took it and we're like, no, we're going to crank it out. It's going to be a sweet rock and roll song. And, you know, if you want to read into it, if you want to learn something, if you want to hear the story, then you will. If you don't, then it's just a great fucking rock song. And you sing along, and you bob your head and you carry on. Right. And, you know, we just don't have any more of that right now. And maybe that's an unfair thing to say. Maybe Gord's legacy will be that we should get out and give more of these local bands, not because they're all going to write like him or more, but I wonder if half of the love of the hip wasn't just the stories that they were telling, but that it was just ours, that America won't get this. They get Nickelback, right? Probably our biggest rock band that we've ever produced, right? They get Avril Lavigne. They get whatever. It's all very... But you don't get this. This is ours. And I don't care if they play your House of Blues in Boston. They're playing the Rogers Center when they get home. Right.
That's right. And we're a little bit young to maybe understand when that happened. Right. Because, you know, the late 80s, early 90s. We're still a little too young to quite grasp this, but I always think of, you know, they go on Saturday Night Live. Again, there's your Canadian connection there. Yeah. Dan Aykroyd connects them in there. Lauren's Canadian. Actually, at that time, they had a couple Canadian acts on the show at that time. And he comes out and he does his Grace 2. And I think as a Canadian kid, you still think – I still think about that video. I don't know about you. I do.
Yeah.
The dancing, everything about it.
Such a bad
it's just so iconic, right?
Yes.
To me.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, you know, when I'm watching – when I saw those, they were, you know, on repeats on the Comedy Network.
Yes.
And I'm watching these as a, you know, probably 14, 15-year-old. I don't know who half of these guys singing are until I get to the episode where the Hip are on.
Right.
And I just couldn't understand why the U.S. didn't love them as much as
right.
we did.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, it was Trouble at the Hen House. And that was, and it's been said a million times, and I think the NHLPA put out a tweet being, you know, thanks for making the car rides easier and the dress rooms more fun, something to that effect.
Yeah.
But that literally was our dressing room, you know, in 1995.
Sure.
So I wasn't even 15 at that point, but that's what it was. That's not made up, right? That's not going back and changing the facts. That's actually what was happening in the late 90s.
No, it's
and
true.
It never made sense to me why anytime I saw them live to go, how do you guys not get this? Like, this is a walking, talking, breathing star.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody who, gosh, I mean, what it was the quote, it was off a CBC article. We talked briefly earlier, right? And
yeah.
Mind you, I didn't see anything on CBC, but I did a lot of article navigating on CBC.ca today. And there was one about his top, you know, top 20 quotes or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And one was Gord explaining how he became the lead singer, which was, I just could remember, you know, I was the guy in school who could remember the most lyrics to the Doors. And you think like such a small beginning, but you start to put together some of his eccentric dance moves on stage.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And you're like, okay, I see it now. I see who you were mimicking in my head. Because he's kind of got like epileptic Mick Jagger, a poor man's David Bowie kind of feel, you know?
Do you think, you know, this has been covered in a lot of ways and you know, we'll both kind of wrap up our Hip thoughts here. But before we do, do you think they can go on? Like, we've seen other bands, it sucks to say it, and it's a harsh thing to say. You can replace a bass player, right? It's hard to replace a frontman that everyone identifies with, and your whole back catalog, everyone's used to this voice and the way he would say it and the way he would enunciate and these sorts of things. And then not just having your frontman, but one who was so different. Like, Gord was not a great singer, but he was a great showman, right?
And he was a performer.
Yeah. And I just wonder, can they, I don't even know if you'd want to, right? It's not like they all fought and broke up and kicked the guy out of the band and now you carry on without him. This would be hard. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if they'll, like, it's probably going to be a while before those guys even want to get back together and jam without him, let alone think about replacing him. But do you think you could do it? Like, to me, the only one that comes close is somehow AC/DC found a guy who sounded like Bon Scott, right? Like, that was such a unique voice, but it wasn't so entrenched. It was very early on still, right? Iron Maiden replaced their front man, but it was only one album in. And this is so iconic. It's so tied into our history. Could you do it?
The only person that comes to mind, and it's going to be in a very different scenario than those two you just listed.
Right.
Queen.
Yeah.
And if you can replace Freddie Mercury as a lead singer, I'd say you might be able to replace anybody.
Yeah.
There's another guy who was very iconic to his country.
Right.
To the world for, you know, other reasons.
Right.
But it took them years before they decided to do that, right?
Yeah.
And they basically went and found somebody who just sounded close enough
yeah.
to Freddie Mercury to do it, not necessarily somebody who was the showman he was.
Right.
And they weren't writing new material. At least I don't think they have been, or they did. I could see them maybe doing some sort of concert, you know, for, you know, to do some charitable work.
For
maybe.
His family, even fundraise or.
Yeah. Something to that effect where, you know, maybe they get some Canadian artists or some.
Yeah,
more pop artists to come out.
Sure,
and do
everybody
something.
Rotates through taking a lead. These other legends, you know, Neil Young leads a song,
yeah.
and then I don't know whoever. The only thing I don't think you would, in my opinion, and I'd like to get your take here. I don't think you go in this case and try and replicate Gord. I don't think you go and try and find someone with that voice. I think if you're gonna do it. You got to go hard the other way and just say, we're mm-hmm. a new band now. We're we might still use the name, but we're, and I'll tell you, I've thought about this for a while because this question's kicked around in my head. I wonder if it's not Dallas Green.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't sound anything like Gord, but he could, mm-hmm. I've heard him cover hip songs before. He would have his own spin on it. And then you write all new stuff with him at your helm, right? He's
yeah.
another well-known, well-established, talented Canadian guy that maybe fans would accept. I think fans would resent it if you just, hey, look, here's this totally new guy no one's ever heard of before, but his voice sounds a little like Gord, so we're going with it, and we're just going to pretend
yeah,
nothing happened.
Yeah, gosh. It's still tough. I mean, I've seen Dallas Green twice, at City in Color.
Sure.
And it's not that it's not his voice. I love his voice.
Right.
Live, his voice is fantastic. I've seen him in the ACC and out on an outdoor stage.
Right.
Yeah, he doesn't quite bring the energy.
Well,
he got away with
Alexis on Fire.
He had some backup on that.
yeah, no, it's true. But
on that band, right? And that's not to take anything away from Dallas Green. I think he's a tremendous artist.
No, it's a different style.
Guy. Yeah. He's a different artist. Gosh, I mean, again, he's the one I would probably say, like, if you had somebody sing Bob Cajun, you know, at a charitable concert
sure,
or something,
sure.
or a fundraiser, that's who I want to see sing.
A mellow song.
Yeah, or...
Fiddler's Green, right?
Fiddler's Green or Wheat King.
Sure.
Something along those lines, right? And I think that would be great. I mean, that's not to say those guys can't go and do something different.
Sure.
Do something, you know, change the name, right? Don't do what Axl Rose tried to do and keep Guns N' Roses, right? Go do.
How about In Excess, a reality show, and just crown some. Mm. Fuck, that was terrible, man. And then we
forgot about that.
That was
wow.
so bad.
Gosh. And there's another guy who, you know, Michael Hutchinson, just sometimes guys are just irreplaceable.
Yep.
Right? And you almost feel like those guys got talked into it by some agent,
sure.
right?
Or they needed a little cash, right?
Yeah, because they were kind of trying to make their 90s comeback there at that point.
Yeah.
But another guy with kind of an unmistakable voice and just oozing charisma. And I think that's what sometimes you can't tear that away from a band.
Right.
Right? And I think Gord was so connected to what we conceptualize as the hip.
Yeah. Well, he is the hip, kind of, right? Like,
it would be so hard to pull those two apart in my mind.
Right.
You know, again, 20 years from now, 15 years from now, who knows? Maybe they need a kick around the tour, you know, for the country, and maybe that's it, and we can all accept it. But
yeah,
I can't imagine them going out as the hip. And I would hope they look at those other bands who just,
yeah.
Didn't work.
No, it's true. It's true.
Gosh.
So I've had
In Excess. Sorry, I'm just having a little 90s moment in my head there.
So I've kind of had my chance over the last little while on Unforced Errors. If you want to check it out, fit number 54 and number 55 on the Unforced Errors show. I kind of ran through, you know, my experiences and my whatever. I kind of had a chance to do that. Is there anything else you kind of want to say about the band before we move into a little sports talk here? And I'm going to give you the floor for a second if there's anything else you'd like to put out there.
You know what? The only thing I could add is just it's amazing to me how many people I've heard from today, whether it's, you know, in person or on social media, that are putting things up about how it's affecting them. People you wouldn't anticipate who like the Hip.
Yeah.
People you didn't anticipate were fans of the Hip. But like we've discussed, I mean, they were really a soundtrack to an entire two generations of Canadians. And, you know, tonight when we go to bed, we can all kind of take solace in the fact that Gord's passed now and he's in a better place, but he's not going to disappear.
That is the
beauty
of an artist.
There's no way he's going to fade away into our subconscious. He's too ingrained into our fabric of a nation.
Yep.
which is a nice thought to think about.
It's true. It's true, because it's one of those things. If you're an artist of any kind, you know, when you lose a loved one, you largely lose almost everything. When you lose an artist, their family and everything is still devastated. And you can't see them in concert anymore. You can't, whatever, but their work is still here. And that's a little bit of solace. And, you know, you referenced earlier seeing the Hip in small venues. The thing that always stood out to me is outdoor shows. I saw them 11 times, five or six of them were outdoors in the summer. It was almost every other summer they were going to tour. It was going to be in some field somewhere. It was going to be and that's kind of what I'll remember. It's tunes on the dock, you know, and then concerts in a field somewhere with, you know, where you're stepping on empty tall boys and there might be a hint of weed in the air and whatever. Yeah, right? Those are unmistakable.
Probably coming from the stage.
Well, that's exactly possible. So,
you know, just to follow up on that, tonight I kind of sat down, I was flipping through some footage I had taken on my cell phone from that last concert tour.
Yep.
And just like you said, I mean, there'd be one song that came on, I'd get goosebumps.
Yep.
And then the next song would come on and I'd have this big smile on my face just remembering that night. And then the song, I'd be almost in tears just sitting here by myself at my computer. It's going to be a long time until those feelings dissipate. And I think that's very different than, and not for everybody, but I think for most of us, you know, Tom Petty passed away. It was just 2 weeks ago. Spencer, I'm forgetting his last name, from Linkin Park passed away just a couple months ago.
Right.
People who definitely touched people's lives. But I think this is going to be a very long mourning process for a lot of us.
Yeah.
Anytime we hear that song on the dock and we hear it at the game and we hear it, you know, played at a Grey Cup party coming up in Ottawa, we're going to just stop and look at each other and go, yeah.
Drag.
You know?
Yep.
Just stop and reminisce a little bit. So, man, you almost wish we all had a personal line to Gord to just say thank you, right? So that's what makes it hard, because to finish this thought off, it's just we really did feel like we knew him.
It's true.
And that's what made him special, man.
Yep, and that's the beauty of his work, right, is that it let everybody in. So, yeah, you know what? No doubt there'll be more on this from a lot of different places, but we thought we'd get it off our chest a little bit here, too. It was just no way of talking tonight and not talking about it. So you want to move on to some hockey talk, though?
Only because it makes me happy.
All right. On that note, Leafs win 6-3, take down the Red Wings, go to 6-1, first in the division, first in the league at the moment.
First in the league, boys.
Is this kind of... I guess I'll ask it this way. Have you been surprised by much that you've seen? I think probably like me, you expected them to be very good this year, maybe challenge for a division title. But is there anything you've seen, good or bad, so far that has caught you off guard?
A few things. I'll start with the bad. I expected the defensive team play to be much better.
Yeah.
And I just want to qualify that for a second, because everybody knew they were going to give up goals.
Sure.
They're a high running gun team.
Yep.
I've mentioned this to you before. They play like it's 1980 all over again, which is fine by me.
Yeah.
Especially when you have that much speed on your team. I'm all good with that.
No,
but
for sure.
Their lack of it's almost like for 5 minutes at a time they just go to sleep on defense, and it was Zetterberg's goal tonight with that wraparound.
Oh my god!
Where it was like Carrick was out to lunch, Bozak was way too slow coming in.
You know what
he
that
was
goal
so
looked
slow
like,
coming
man?
In, JVR was in there.
That's the NHL 94 cheat goal. Where you would just circle behind the net and you could do it will and bury it every single time while the cousin you're playing against smashes his controller, gets mad at you. Right? Over and over and over. I didn't know that goal would still work in 2017, but NHL 94 every single time.
There you go. There's your Sega plug for the day.
Yeah. No, you're right. That was terrible zone coverage on that goal. Like, everything and about it. McElhaney was awful.
He was still on the other side of the net.
Yeah.
I don't understand what he was looking at. And it just, and it's not just the Leafs. It does look like, somebody put that, it was a similar goal they scored on Carey Price yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Where he was just completely out of the net. And I'm like, it just seems like a trend. And I don't know if it's a function of just too many young kids in the lineup right now. A lot of teams, you know, we're pushing our young kids into the lineup because they're fast and they're talented.
Yep.
But they haven't necessarily learned the proper systems yet. Well,
and not just they're fast and talented, they're cheap. And that's big for a lot of teams. They're on these entry-level deals, and you got to stay under the cap. So
that's right. So you get the guys who are 6 years in who are in Europe now because they're too expensive because there's – you know, minimum contracts, which are still more expensive than the rookie contracts.
Right.
This causes some trouble. And there's a lot of talk about this in the NFL because of the same situation, but also because they've cut down on the number of days you can practice.
Right.
In full pads. And there's, you know, that's been a conversation for the last year as well. And they're saying, you know, teams that have better coaches typically have a little bit of an advantage because there's less time to just practice these things with these kids.
Right. Yeah.
And it wasn't until today and I saw that goal and I went, holy shit. Like, these guys have been playing hockey, right? Like, this isn't a new sport to them. They should know to follow the puck a little bit, especially when you're a goalie. That should be day one. Follow the puck.
It's true, man. It's, you know what? I thought, obviously, he looked terrible on that one, and there was another one, I'm talking about McElhaney now, that wasn't so good. But I thought in the third period, when, you know, they needed a couple of saves, he gave it to them. If it's going to be, you know, the Leafs as a team right now have an .893 save percentage between these two guys. Not good enough, right? But if on a night like this where the team is scoring, you probably, you know, and they mentioned it on the broadcast, there's going to be a save or two you need to make that stops it from getting away from you. And he did manage to make those. So you take that and you move forward, because those are the ones that Jonas Enroth wasn't giving you at the beginning of last year, right? There's a lot of talk now. Calvin Pickard down in the minors, is Garrett Sparks ready to take McElhaney's jobs, these sorts of things. I think as long as he keeps getting little wins like this until it burns him, where those bad ones burn him, I think he's probably going to stick around.
I would have to agree with you. I mean, the job of a backup goalie, in particular Toronto, is basically just make the big save and keep the team in it.
Yeah.
Right? We've had Glenn Healy. and if that's your bar, you're not going to do too bad, right? So I think he's a fine backup. I agree with you. At some point, again, they're just going to go with the younger guy because he's a cheaper option.
Yep.
That's what it comes down to, right? And is there a significant enough difference between Garrett Sparks and Curtis? Is there a big enough difference between them and Enroth?
Well, I think and Sparks might be better than McElhaney.
Gosh, who's the other guy we picked up from
Calvin
Vegas?
Calvin Pickard,
thank you.
Yeah.
What's up, you know, Picks? I don't know if there's enough of a difference between these guys.
Yeah.
You can look up the stats on NHL 2K, I guess, and tell me, but I think they're pretty much interchangeable, right? So you're going to go with the guy who's cheapest and who the dressing room likes the best.
And might still have a future, right? Like, McElhaney's 30-some-odd years old. He is what he is. And I mean, I guess you keep him around right now to do his thing, and it lets these kids get some games under their belts in the minors. But as soon as he stops doing his thing, he's got to go. And you go with one of these kids, because I truly believe Sparks is a better option than – as a better goaltender than Curtis McAlaney. So,
yeah, and I wonder if they're just if that's a function of, you're right, you know, keep him there, let him place hold till it gets a little later on in the season, and let Sparks get his reps in, right, in the minors.
Well, the other thing, like, play. Why wouldn't you, in the situation like this, where you're coming home, right, and the whole team's traveled, Sparks is already in town with the, like, to me, this might be a terrible way to treat a guy, but I don't really care. I'm just trying to win games. McElhaney never starts a game. Never starts a game. You call up Sparks when you want to give Anderson a night off and then send him back down when you're done. McElhaney just travels with the team in case he gets hurt, right, in the middle of a game sometime. To me, I don't see any reason to keep starting this guy. But yeah, whatever. We got away with it tonight.
That would be an interesting option. I wonder what that would do in the dressing room, right? That might be more of a... You just don't do it.
It would stop you from ever being able to sign another competent backup. He's never coming, right?
So. Probably that too, right? I don't think it's quite like Major League Baseball where you can just pull up a starter every now and again because you're rotating five anyways.
Yeah, true.
Goalies are a different beast, right? We know that. So I think you do got to handle them with some kid gloves. And, you know, he's been a good soldier for the Leafs the last, almost full year now. So
yeah.
As long as he's playing games like this, he made a couple really good saves today. He's only going to get 12 games this year at most, right? They're going to run Anderson till he's just dry.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. He makes that one save on Crosby in the second last game of the season last year and got himself a 2-year extension out of it, right? Like, it's just one of the biggest saves in the last decade of the franchise, and he turned it into a brand new contract. So good for him, I guess.
Yeah, and I was at that game, and the fans they definitely appreciated that game.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because we all went in going, oh, we're so close and we're going to miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
Based on this
fucking
one game,
Penguins,
right?
In here tonight. Yeah.
We got the Penguins, and he stole that game single-handedly. So,
yeah.
Gosh, you know what? He definitely earned that contract, even if it was just for that.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to live and die by our goalies. That's the reality,
I think you're right,
of this
there.
Team.
Yep.
It would be nice if, again, they played better team defense, right? They just have to be, you know, sound around the puck. They need to not make huge mistakes. It's not like they're playing as poor as the Edmonton Oilers right now, who are just making AHL mistakes out there right now. But
it's unbelievable. I picked them. Gosh. I believe I picked them to win the division, if not finish second.
I did mean to chirp you about that.
It's not looking great.
I did come in with that chirp on my mind, and
it's a long season, but you start to, you're burying yourself a little bit, right? Like, I think it's more likely that a bad team gets off to a hot start and cools back off than a good team gets off to a bad start and is able to ramp it up at some point, and we're not quite there yet. But once you're, you know, 10, the Leafs have 12 points now, right? And we got teams, Buffalo has one win. They're already 10 points back. Like, at some point, I know it's early, but it's not that early, right? Once those spreads start to, and that's what the Oilers got to be. I think they got enough talent. They're going to make the playoffs still, I think. But I think they're running out of runway to still think they're going to be a division champion. They're going to make me fucking
look
bad.
Well, I think that's what it comes down to, right? I mean, it's just probability and math at some point, right? And Cleveland Indians are a good example right now, right? Because everybody came out and, you know, beginning of the season, they were playing okay. And, you know, I think they were sitting in second place for a while. And then they just, you know, they slowly took over first place and they made up for that slow start with 22 games, was it, right?
It was at least that. It might have been 24.
I mean, they set the record, right? Which was insane.
True.
But it's probability, and everybody's got regression to the mean, right?
Yep.
They were going to lose at some point, and I don't think there's ever been a team in baseball to have a 10-game win streak and actually win the World Series.
Interesting.
It's almost like one of those weird stats where it's like, you know, they've almost peaked too early, or they've had to run themselves
ragged just to get
empty, right? Yeah, to get to that point. And I would agree with you. I think Edmonton's still going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I would find it hard for them to not make the playoffs.
Right.
I don't think Vegas is going to keep running rampant over the entire league. James Neal is not going to win the scoring race this year.
You're just still a little hurt that he tore you up in the first week of our fantasy pool.
I am very hurt about that. I'm super, super hurt. Although, just as a side note to Vegas, what's not being talked about enough is how the NHL sugarcoated their entrance into the league. If you look back at the history of NFL teams, NBA teams, NHL teams coming into new leagues, you do not get a pick like Neal, Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, like, you don't get one of those guys.
Even Nate
those
Schmidt
guys aren't available.
Like, looks like he's going to be a top pair defenseman, legit, not just because he's in Vegas. Like, no, it's true.
You know,
they wanted that, right? Like, when they charged him $500 million to buy an expansion franchise, as opposed to the, like, $80 million it cost to buy the Atlanta Thrashers and get into the league, it was with the understanding, we will allow you or help you get competitive quick.
And maybe this is it's a positive thing, right, that other leagues need to look at this, because one of the reasons that, to go to basketball for a second, but Vancouver lost their team was they just could never get good.
Yeah. Well, the same thing, the Thrashers we talked about, right? I can't believe that the Blue Jackets survived with how terrible they were for over a decade. They just sucked.
I think it's because they're in Columbus and there's nothing else to do.
Yeah, well, there's something to that, right? Whereas in Atlanta, you got the Braves and the Hawks and the Falcons and all kinds of college shit going on and whatever. I'm not going to watch a terrible fucking hockey team night after night.
That's it.
Did you have any thoughts on Marner being dropped down, Brown being moved up a line or two? It depends on whether you see, I guess, Bozak as the second or third line. But any thoughts?
Now, I know I've been in the minority in this camp for a year and a half now, so I'm okay with it. I always thought the two guys we need to keep were Austin Matthews and Willie Nylander.
Well, you're not in the minority in this conversation.
I always figured that those were the two that were, and it's not a knock on Marner. I just think those guys are better NHL players. I think they have slightly more skill. I think Marner's always going to score the highlight reel goal.
Yeah.
He's the guy who's going to put up that Patrick Kane NHL 2K like goal every, and he's going to get five of them a year and it's going to be dirty.
Right.
But he's also going to just do silly things on the ice, right? Sometimes you just notice he's too small on the ice. He gets pushed around a little bit too much still. And he just, how many times has a puck gone off his stick?
Yeah.
Onto another, the other team's sticking in the net in the first week of hockey.
I'm willing
to get out of the way. Like you got, he doesn't learn as well, it seems. But worse than that to me is his body language.
Yeah, there is that.
He's been slumping his head a lot lately. Shoulders down, that sort of thing. A demotion to a young guy is never a bad thing because you want to see how they respond.
Yep.
I don't think you go out and trade.
No,
Marner,
no,
just
no,
for
no.
the sake of it. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying when those paychecks start to come in.
Yeah.
When
you
got to
make tough choices. Well, it's got to be tough for him as a Toronto kid, wants to do well, wanted to be a Leaf. And you come in and you assume if you're probably coming in as the guy in any other era, right? When there's no Matthews, even Nylander, as you've mentioned, right? He would have been the most talented kid they had drafted in decades. And because of the timing.
He was for a full year.
Yeah, okay.
He had a full year of being the most talented guy.
And so he comes in and you come in at this time where all these other guys are coming in as well. And, Matthews is getting a lot of the attention, and rightfully so. The guy's been on fire. But, instead of it being this trio, it's almost they move Nylander up and now he's making magic with Austin Matthews. Like those two are unstoppable together. And there probably is a little bit of a letdown and the frustration builds. And he is a young kid. I'm willing to give him a little bit of time that he's got to learn the defensive game, but it's bad right now. And I'll give him that time. But as you've mentioned, the body language has got to go, right? Like you got to show that you're Because last year they dropped Nylander 100%. Down to the fourth line for 10, 15 games. And he didn't slump. He didn't whatever. He turned the fourth line into something that was threatening from time to time. And
exactly, yeah. And, you know, there's nothing, like I said, there's nothing wrong with these kids being put in a position where they have to produce.
Yeah.
It is Toronto. It is a big market, and you've got to produce. And you got to see if you can, you know what? One of the things NHL players have said in the past about Toronto is, oh, there's so much pressure. There's so much media.
Yep.
So you want guys who relish that here. And I think it's silly to believe that nobody ever wants to play here, because if baseball players want to play in New York,
right,
you're going to find some hockey players who want to play in Toronto.
No doubt.
And it does look like, for the most part, the team is relishing it. And again, he's 20 now, right?
Yep.
Mitch Marner's 20.
That's right.
Gosh, he's still a kid, right? I mean, he's got so much growing up to do, and he's doing it before our eyes, unfortunately for him. You hope that they find a way to keep all three, but I don't know how you keep those three big guns plus Connor Brown plus Zach Hyman.
Jake Gardner needs a contract in 2 years or 1 year. Yeah.
And the list goes on and on. And at some point, Liljegren, who's absolutely destroying the AHL right now since he's finally over his mono.
Right. No, it's true.
Which, as we know, makes a hockey player. So,
do you not think... The thing that's been interesting to me about this is I referenced Nylander last year and how he was sent to the fourth line for a little bit, and then he was moved back up to to play with Matthews, and he's never left, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's being a little underreported. I guess Marner has been demoted, but why are we not talking about Connor Brown being promoted? He played with Matthews for a while last year. He moved down, played on a really solid line with Kadri and Komarov in the playoffs. Those guys were impossible to play against. Washington was having fits by the end of that series. He was told this year, because of bringing in Marlowe and the way things had shaken out, you're on the fourth line. And he went the first game of the season. I believe he was second on the team in ice time. There was another game where he led the team in ice time from the fourth line. He was still putting up points. He was still getting on the power play, still getting on the penalty kill. And he did his job, and when it came time that there was an opportunity, they went, okay, here you go. Moved him up with two other offensive guys. And he earned that. And as you mentioned, man, I don't think it's a bad thing that Marner's going to have to go earn that. But I think it's just as easy, if you're really paying attention, to want to look at this as Brown being promoted more than Marner being demoted. I know both things have to happen for it to work, but I'd be just as eager to look at it as Brown earning his way up rather than Marner pushing his way down.
I remember hearing the joke last year on one of the radio stations here in the city that, you know, if this was any other year, Connor Brown on the Maple Leafs would be the number one jersey.
Yep.
He'd be the guy on every magazine, every sports blog.
20 goals as a rookie, no joke, right? It's
And plays a pretty solid defensive game.
And then that year, he's like down fourth, like behind all those guys, right? Behind Matthews, Nylander, Marner, all the, even Kadri. What, like, he's
nobody,
a nobody
would know him walking down the street. Right. Is the joke of it, yeah. Right? I mean, there's absolutely nobody would know who he is in the city of Toronto.
No, exactly.
As Leaf crazy as we are.
Oh, it's just wild.
And so kudos to him, right? And there's, you know, there's something to be said about being the guy who doesn't have it all handed to him, right?
Yeah.
You got to earn your coach's respect. You got to earn the GM's respect. And Babcock is one of those coaches who, once he trusts you, he looks to you, right? I mean, it took all of 3 games for Austin Matthews to earn that trust and respect last year after, you know, Babcock.
4 goals on night one, you go, all right, you're good, you're fine.
I just remember Babcock being like, you know, we're going to let it see how, you know, watch it play out.
He'll be on the third line till Christmas. Oh, okay.
Yeah. By game two, he's like, all right, so you're just playing 40 minutes tonight, right? Like, just get out there, kid.
No, that's true.
So, I mean, you know what? That's a good way to look at it. And Toronto's got an abundance of riches right now. And that's...
And someone's going to get hurt.
Again, right? It's not like you want a guy like... Every Toronto fan wants a Toronto area kid to be a star on this team, right? That's not a hidden secret or anything. But if you're looking to see at some point, if you've got to make a move, if you've got to make a trade in 2 years,
right?
And what could you get for one of these guys, right? Are you moving Connor Brown and Zach Hyman? Or are you moving Mitch Marner and getting maybe some sort of king's ransom for him.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's going to become a reality in a real hurry as these guys all start to get paid.
And they're going to get paid because Eichel and his curly hair got paid way too much.
God. Yeah. How's that going? Anything else you want to touch on before we wrap this one up?
I just wanted to bring to light one little thing that you mentioned off the get-go when we were talking hockey there.
Sure.
One thing that I really want to point out, because I know the hockey takes on this show are usually pretty lowbrow with Rob on here. So yeah. I wanted to point something out interesting and integral to hockey that, you know, your listeners are really into. But watch the shot, that wrist shot that Austin Matthews has right now and what he's tinkered with it.
The release is scary.
I don't know if I've ever seen any hockey player release the puck with the speed that he has he's repeatedly catching goalies.
Well, even that short side goal tonight, you can go, Howard should stop that. But you go, yeah, but oh my God, it just took off up into the, like, it's insane what he's doing right now with that release.
I mean, he made Price fall.
Yeah, I love that.
It caught him off guard so much that it made him fall. And it's not like he's, you know, coasting in, you know, in like Joe Neuwendijk, you know, at 5 miles an hour past the blue line right now, or Jason Allison, right? Like,
right.
Austin Matthews is cruising in. Yep. And the way he's able to get that shot off is just, God, it seems like every game there's a highlight reel of him doing that. Just unbelievable. So that's the one thing I've been absolutely amazed and true. I've been pleasantly surprised about. But also, I don't know if he's talking to Nazem Kadri or if he's booth right beside him in the dressing room, but that's the second time. Tonight was the second time that Nazem Kadri's put in a goal like that as well.
Yeah.
We're short side coming up and you're just like watching it on TV. You're expecting a pass.
How about the night before in that Washington game? Have you ever seen a nicer empty net goal? Like that should run of the mill.
I was playing some beer league and I missed the goal.
Oh my God. You grab the highlight. Cause me describing it won't do it justice, but
oh no, you know, sorry. You're right. I saw the GIF when I got home.
Okay. Yeah. It was like for an empty net goal. You go, oh my God. Like what a skill play. So,
but, I mean, these guys are talented. And a guy like Nazem Kadri 3 years ago was one of our top three skilled guys, maybe top two right after Phil Kessel.
Yeah.
And now he's maybe number five.
Right. Down the lineup.
Skill-wise.
No, it's unreal.
I mean, a guy like Patrick Marleau is just like...
The depth is just scary. And that's the other thing when you go back to Marner, right, is someone is going to get hurt. We got through last year almost completely unscathed. It's not going to happen again. And you don't know who it's going to be. You don't wish it on anyone. But if all of a sudden JVR or whatever, Marleau or Connor Brown or Komarov or somebody gets hurt, all of a sudden you don't have any of these types of guys on the fourth line. Everybody moves back up, and it's one of those things. But right now, to be upset about having, you know, 10 unreal skill forwards for 9 spots, it's a little counterproductive to be mad about it. You just go, well, I guess we'll have to deal with it.
Yeah, got to dig in a little bit harder, right? So I got one last tip, and I hope it's not too late for any of your listeners who are betting fans, as I am.
Okay.
But this is one I ended up in an argument with a bartender over, and if you know me, I never get in an argument with the
last
bartender.
Last call is not yet.
Exactly. So I was in the bar 2 weekends ago, and we were talking a little basketball, and the bartender overhears the conversation. He comes over, and he wants to chat.
Right.
So we got talking about basketball, and I said to him, your best bet is to bet for the Toronto Raptors, your Toronto Raptors, to finish first in the East in the regular season.
So this was before the Celtics had their season explode in one ankle-shattering moment.
This was Thanksgiving weekend.
Okay.
And he looked at me strange, and he said, Boston's better. And I said, no, they're not. And he said, Cleveland's better. I said, yes, they are. But they're not going to play all the games.
Right, right.
So now that Boston's gone.
That was horrific.
And yeah, I suggest everybody
that? Does. GIF? Whatever.
Do not look that up if you haven't seen it. Just do not look it up. Because it is stomach turning.
I swear to God, I almost threw up in my mouth. Like, and I know people say that as a joke, but I was ill looking at that.
It wasn't. I mean, Odell Beckham had broken his ankle over the weekend.
Right.
Or sorry, 2 weekends ago. In what you would expect of an injury to break your ankle, but not a, I mean, Gordon Hayward just sustained like a dislocation and fracture,
horrifying.
A rotary fracture. Gosh, I heard one, I think their doctor said 4 months, and I'm like, there's no way that guy's coming back in 4 months. There's not to be a basketball player.
Sure.
He's aiming for next year, right? Which is unfortunate. You never, like you said, he might play on the other team, but you never want to see a guy out like that.
No.
At any point in the season, really. I mean, that's just young guy who's just trying to do his job, right?
And sure.
Sad to see.
But it makes your bet look better.
Makes my bet look a lot better.
Okay. So we should do this again here real soon now that the NBA season is, upon us. Maybe next week we'll have to fire that up, get some Raptors takes in here, and then... We're only a couple of weeks away from the TCA Grey Cup coverage. You will be, forget the Skype machine, you will be in town, in studio, on the go.
That's
with
right.
Captain Blowhard, Captain Lowbrow, as we're now going to start calling it. So lots of good stuff ahead, but we should next
he's
gonna week.
He's going to love that nickname, by the way.
I may sneak in and change his Twitter handle for him before he... Little known fact, I had to create his fucking account for him, so not that it's getting much use. But yeah, so lots of good stuff. Maybe we can do that Raptors thing next week and, get up and going here.
Sounds good, buddy.
All right. That is Tall Can Sports number 175 with, an emphasis on the hip. Go out, check out. If you haven't been a hip fan in the course of your life, go out right now while everyone's talking about it. Find one song, give it a chance, and, you just might fall in love. If you're looking for more content from us, you can check that out at patreon.com/tallcanaudio. Otherwise, hit us up on social media at tallcanaudio on Facebook and Twitter. My name is Matt Robinson with Maddie Lang tonight. That was Tall Can Sports 175, and we'll see you on the next one.
Well, this one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at tallcanaudio.